Okay. Good afternoon. I hope you're having a good week at TechEd. Thank you for coming along to this session. Today we're going to talk about running a global massive scale web application on Windows Azure websites. My name is Andrew Westgarth, and I'm a program manager on the Azure websites team. So some of the things that we're going to look at today, we're going to set expectations of what we're actually going to deliver in this session, what sort of load we're looking to scale up to. The majority of the session will be architecting a web application for scale. So we're taking a sample application in different stages all the way through its life story to really achieve some massive figures. And we'll briefly dip in at the end to scale a couple of real-world applications and show you some examples that are out there now running on our platform. So the question comes, why should we architect for the cloud? Why should we change the way that we develop software? Cloud application spending is growing the market and is displacing traditional software development. Software spending, we estimate, will grow more than 200% between 2010 on the far left and 2020 on the far right. The majority of the growth that we're seeing is going to be from the net new cloud. So you'll see we're going from zero at 2010 up to 96% in 2020. And we're seeing that traditional development's tailing off. So it's really key that we address these scenarios and prepare you and all of our other customers with the skills and the techniques to be able to do this and the services. So a brief look at some of the sites and companies that are using Azure websites. So you'll see on this slide, we've got a number of Microsoft properties. So Office 365, Skype, Bing, OneDrive, they all make use of some of our services. And then we've got large companies such as Toyota, Sports, the British and Irish Lions. And I just want to demonstrate a couple of the sites that we've got currently running on Azure websites, just so you can see the kind of real-world applications. So Microsoft Azure, the actual website, that's running on Azure websites. This site's unique in that it is distributed in every single region that we run. So there is a local instance running of Microsoft Azure, the actual website there for you. In the US, we've got such a marketing site for a Dairy Gold, local to Seattle. We do things like special launches for movies that are tied up with Skype. So here's one for Captain America. And more recently, a local airline to anybody in Spain, Iberia, they are now hosting their full ticketing system on Azure website. So it just goes to show the kind of scale and the kind of applications that we can support. So why is massive scale and being ready for business really important in the web? So web applications are diverse and varied. So they can be everything from a blog. So we've got some examples up there. Office blogs, Azure blogs, Skype blogs, Bing Dev Center. The Microsoft News Center is hosted on Azure websites, and that gets a huge amount of traffic. All the way through to e-commerce sites, ticketing sites, marketing, and other things that we would have there. Mobile backends, web APIs is quite a common thing for people to host on websites, Facebook games. The list is endless. Please don't let the name websites fool you. It's purely web applications, and you can put quite a strong workload on our platform. Being ready for business is absolutely critical when you're serving your content through the web. When your application or your site is not available, you can't make money. And if you've got a large amount of downtime, then consumer faith drops as well and business faith. So we're looking to get extremely low to no perceived downtime. So it's virtually physically impossible to guarantee 100% uptime because you'll always have some updates, you'll always have some patching to do. So if anybody tries to sell you 100% uptime, then you're pretty much trying to offer blazing hot 40 degrees in the UK all year round, and that just never happens. So there we go. I've got a couple of pieces of swag here, and it's Friday, so I want to try and get some some audience participation if I can. Can somebody tell me, under the SLA, how many minutes of downtime is tolerated at 99.95%? Anyone brave enough to have a guess? Sorry? No. That's 4 hours. That's quite a lot. 99.95 in a month, 240 minutes is 4 hours. So, no, the answer is 21 minutes. But you can have a charger for at least trying. So what we're looking to do is we're looking to effectively have no downtime as much as possible so that we don't have customers missing out on purchasing our services, using our services, and that kind of thing. But in addition to that, we're looking at performance and global latency. If you've got a very small, underperforming web server running and you're trying to serve a global property, then you immediately get customers having a bad experience. So we're looking as well from a global scale for low latency. So if you've got customers in the Far East, serving your application from the US might not give you the greatest latency in the world. So you might be looking there to host your website in a Far East location. In addition, we want it to be easy to manage. If you're using a PaaS service, platform as a service, you don't want to have to worry about standing up VMs, doing all the patching, all the maintenance, etc. So we've got a whole story around DevOps, the methodology, being able to test, deploy, and configure your website, either through scripting or through deployable packages. And then we've got the monitoring and the analysis for you to actually see what's going on over a period of time. Massive scale. We are looking today to get in this application up to well over 100,000 requests per second. So that's the kind of workload that we're pushing through. But on the internet itself, and on Azure websites, we are handling many tens of millions of requests per day. I think we broke 1.5 billion recently in any single one day on our platform. The peak request per second for most websites is between 5,000 and 10,000 requests per second. To give you an example of what that means, if you are getting over 20,000 requests per second, you would be one of the sites in the top 100 websites in the United States. That's discounting the likes of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So it just gives you an idea of where we're going with this. Scalability. This is a definition from Wikipedia. It's not something we've come up with. So scalability is the ability of a system, in this case a website or web application, to handle a growing amount of work, so HTTP requests, in a capable manner, i.e. not to fall over or go belly up, or its ability to be enlarged to accommodate that growth so that we can scale it out so that we can increase the number of customers. So what are our scaling options? We could scale up. This is traditionally, so we'd go out and buy a bigger server, more memory, more CPU, more storage. But that doesn't give us the flexibility to be able to scale across regions. And also, buying bigger and bigger servers still has a limit. There's still a limit of Moore's Law. You can't go higher than the biggest piece of hardware that you find. So what we recommend and for a cloud platform is that you scale out. So you use horizontal scaling. So you use more of the same resource, but you use more of them. So it could be a medium-sized virtual machine or instance, and you use multiple to spread the load. So let's now dive into architecting for scale, and we're going to take a web app all the way through scalability. And the kind of way that we're going to do this is I'm from the UK, and we've got a very famous TV show called Blue Peter, and they do things like, here's one I made earlier. So we're going to go and take it through each stage, and then we'll dive into what we've tweaked to get us the extra performance. So we're going to start with a level one application at around about 100 requests per second. We'll move up to level two, where we're going to be serving over 10,000 requests per second. And then we go to the boss level, which is over 100,000 requests per second. OK, so you're familiar with Web Matrix? Web Matrix is a similar IDE to Visual Studio. It gives you a little less power, but it's quite a nice rich application. So we're going to go into WebMatrix, and I'm going to create a new site. And just to show you the application that we're using one of the standard templates that you get with WebMatrix, and we're using the photo gallery there on the right-hand side. It's just a standard ASP.NET MVC application. We have not made any changes or rigged anything, so it's just a straightforward app. To show you what it looks like, I've got it up here and running. So it's just a gallery application where you can upload photos and add comments and that kind of thing. So I've already created an album here for TechEd Europe. And you see I've got a couple of pictures in there. I'm not sure where the one on the far left is, but the second one's certainly my favorite coffee shop in Seattle. So there we go. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to log in. I'm just going to upload a photo just to prove there's no smoke and mirrors and it does actually work. So there we go. Quite a simple application, but it's good to use something simple to work on and highlight how you can take even a simple app and scale it out wider and add a little bit more complexity. So the photo gallery untouched. So we've got code, content, database, and session state all in one box inside the one website container. So we've got a database stored on local disk, session state stored in local memory, images stored on local disk, and it's a stateful application, so we're maintaining state all the way through. Let's have a look at how that's rigged up in the code. So I have a copy of that photo gallery already open in WebMatrix. One thing you'll note up here is we're using a SQL CE database, so that's local. So that doesn't scale because it's local to the individual instance of the web application. So we can't then, we'll have different copies of the database as we go out. So we can't scale that. We're using session state. So we're storing the details of the authenticated user in session as we move through. And another element that will cause us problem when we're scaling is we're actually storing the images as bytes, so it's a byte array and then storing that in the database. That in itself may not look as a potential problem to scaling, but that means that the load that's increased on your database as you scale up and you get more and more users is getting hit consequently. So we'd advise that you actually just have a pointer in your database and then you store your images off-site. All websites' content is blocked by blob storage. So by storing them on local disk, in this case, the database, then that I/O is distributed through many clients. But it still means that you've got a potential bottleneck there. So if we have a look at the results of some Visual Studio load testing that we've done. So this was done prior to this demonstration. And the performance is relatively poor, really, because of using SQL CE. There's no way of adding more power to that instance. But you'll see from the graph, we can handle up to about 50 users before we start hitting problems. Average requests per second between 18 and 45, so you're probably looking up at the end of 40. So 40 requests before we start hitting problems. Generally, most users would expect a website page to render within a second. So you're looking for high performance. But if you look on the bottom, we're using a medium instance at that point, and we're starting to get a number of failures. So we're getting a number of errors. So this is where we're seeing service unavailables, timeouts, that sort of thing. So we see that we really need to do some work to get this to scale past that limit. So what can we do for level two? So for level two, at level one, we had everything in one container, in one box, on one machine, running everything. So what we're going to do is we're going to move the content off into blob storage. We get the benefit there in your own blob storage account, which means you get higher performance. Your application's the only one consuming those IOs and that resource. And then we're going to move the database off into SQL Azure. And then we're going to move the session state off there as well. So now only the website code is sitting on the website itself, which means we can redeploy that application multiple times on multiple instances, and we get scale at the website level. So let's close down Web Matrix and that one because I don't need that anymore. So level two, the same application that you saw before. We've got different galleries in here. Just because we've run a few more samples through, but a wide variety, not a huge amount of difference. You'll see we're using Discus, so that's another way of offloading some load because we're not handling the comments anymore. But the key element here is, if I look at the DevTools and we look at where that image is being sourced from, can you see there it's coming from a storage account in blob storage? So therefore that the website's not getting hit with all of those requests for those images, they're now sitting off and the requests are being handled by blob storage. So are you all familiar with the new preview portal? So we have the blue one, which is the production portal, and we now have this nice colorful portal with blades. So here we have the application, we have a website, we have a web hosting plan, which is what governs what resources the website has. We have level two storage, which is our storage account, a number of application insights registries, the Photo Gallery SQL database, so that's the database that we're using with this application, and we've got some staging slots in there as well, but they're not being used for the production site. If we look at, if you're not familiar with web hosting plans give you details of what's available to host the website on. So this web hosting plan has details of the site that it's on, the size of the instance, memory availability, and we can see all the details and connect up to further resources linked. So we can go and have a look at what we've got running on SQL, what type of version it is, get some stats around that. It's just a way of navigating around the portal and managing. So we're going to the app and we're going to upload another photo, so I just need to log in. And I'll do it in this TechEd gallery again, and let's upload a picture of a blue screen that I got last night while I was preparing for this session. So while that's uploading, we're going to have a look at, we have an element with websites called Kudu. Were any of you in Ahmed's session on Wednesday, where I think he went into this in detail? So Kudu is what we call, which we consider a sister site of Azure websites. So for every Azure website, you get one of these. So just to highlight the URL, so you have your website address. So our website is level2.azurewebsites.net. And if you add in between there .scm, you can access this environment, the Kudu environment, and I'll go through some of the features. The SCM, if you're wondering, comes originally because this is how we do the hookup between source control management. So that's what SCM stands for. But we've done so much more with Kudu since then. So we can see information about the environment. So we can get all of our environment variables. You'll notice connection strings and things like that pop up. We can surface your app settings as an environmental variable to your web jobs and elements such as that, so you can make use of them. We have all the environment variables that you would expect from various programming languages that we support. So website supports ASP.NET, PHP, Node.js, Java, Python. So we've got quite a wide range of stack on our platform. You can also look at processes that are running. So we've got a process explorer in here. I'll just wait for this to spin up. So you'll notice there are two worker processes, so W3, WP. One is for handling the website, and the second one is for handling your web jobs that are running. So just to give you an idea, and you can even take out diagnostic dumps, dump files, so you can analyze those as well off at your own time. We also, one of the most unknown features that we have here is we have a thing that we call site extensions, which you can add this way, but you can also add in the new portal, the preview portal that we have. And this is how we surface things like Visual Studio Online, but we also have a gallery. So you can publish extensions for websites and take use. So we could make use of, say, this one here, the Azure Minifier. If you're not aware of what minification is stripping out all of the white space in your JavaScript and CSS files, so it means that the file download is even smaller when a client's requesting. So you can, a click of a button, add that to your site, and you've got the benefit of that. If you're a developer, you can develop extensions for these and publish them to our gallery so that other people can make use of them. I think underlying that technology is NuGet. So if you're familiar with NuGet, it's quite easy to prepare these packages. So if we switch back to that website and I just do a refresh, has it appeared? No, it hasn't. Okay. And Demo God's not exactly smiling on me this Friday afternoon, but there we go. What I'm going to do is, in the meantime, is we are actually using a web job to help with the upload. So let's go back to the slides, and then we'll come back to that content. So we've moved the database to the cloud. That's in SQL Azure. We've moved the site content to Blob, so all the images now are served from Blob storage. We've made the site stateless, so it's a non-sticky session. So the database is handling sessions, and I'm going to show you another feature there with the non-sticky sessions that you need to take care of. And we're now able to horizontally scale the web tier, so we're able to add more instances at that level so we can take the web application and deploy it multiple times. So before we dive into the figures, so in Azure websites, we use a load balancer called ARR, Application Request Routing. And if you're not familiar with it, we have a session cookie which enables you to route the request to the same instance all the time. By default, on Azure websites, we have it enabled so that we can aid with customers that are moving to our platform with stateful applications. But in the instance where you've managed to get to level two and you've got a stateless website, you want to distribute that load to the multiple front ends. You don't want it to be all going to one. So you need to make a small modification to your web config and just disable the ARR session affinity cookie. And it's just as simple as adding this small snippet of XML. And then that will ensure that when the ARR node receives the request to your site, then the requests go to the multiple instances. And that's another example of another one of our extensions, so Visual Studio Online Editor. You get that out of the box if you wish. You can enable that, and that's another way of you being able to make small changes to your website depending on what your deployment methodology is. Let's see if that picture's got there yet. Yes, there we go. So yeah, that greeted me late last night when I was preparing my demo for this morning, running through it. It really gave me a great feeling. Okay, so what happened there? So we've got session content going to blob storage, and we've got entries going to a database. So what magic are we running to do that? Well, it's not particularly magic, but we have a web job running in the background. When you upload the information into the website, the information and the metadata in the file is written to an Azure queue. And then we have a web job in the background which picks up each message off the queue. It's running continuously. And then does the multiple writes. So it'll write your file to blob storage, and then it'll write the pointer back to the SQL database with the metadata. So to look at some of the changes that we've made to accommodate that. So you'll see here, this is the view. So this is the view for a website. And we've got a handler in here that helps us to map where the storage route of that site is, where the containers are, and that kind of thing. So it helps us to build the URL path to that image. So there's the helper there. It's just building it up based on a series of settings from the app settings. And then we have a web job here, which is web jobs are straightforward applications that you can upload with your website, and they effectively do scheduled tasks for you, or continuous work, or individual workload. They're a great way of adding additional functionality to your website. So this web job is effectively getting the details of the storage location, building that up, and then writing the files and the metadata to the two areas. So we process the queue, we pick the message up off the queue, each copy of the site, then we write the files to blob storage, and we write the information back to the database. In addition, we have another area of Kudu. So if you want to see that URL for reference. That's where we can see that our web jobs are running, your SCM website / your jobs. And then we have this job running continuously. I can see the times when the functions are invoked. So you can see there when they were actually invoked and the status. And also for assisting with your troubleshooting or anything similar, you can toggle the output and see the information as and when they've thrown through. And if you dive into the individual process queue, you can also see the information about what's actually being done at that time, depending on what you're outputting. So the reason we use the web jobs is so we can do the upload asynchronously, but all of the database read, so if we show you that here, is all done synchronously. So it's just direct calls to the database. We haven't made any changes to the application code apart from the remapping to use blob storage. Everything else is as it was. We're just using SQL Azure instead of SQL CE. So we've made small changes, but we've managed to hopefully move up to quite large scale. So we did further testing from this, and we found that we are able to push through, what have we got at the bottom there? With three large instances, we're pushing through nearly 20,000 requests per second from Visual Studio. The reason why, when we moved up to around about 25,000 requests per second, we started seeing some errors. And the main reasons we started seeing some errors there is that we were using the lowest tier of SQL. So we were starting to hit bottlenecks with SQL, but then we could change that up and use a more performant level of SQL Azure, and then we get even more scale. Second chance for swag. You'll notice in the column that the average RPS for Visual Studio, so on the penultimate line, 19,855, but on websites we're only serving just over 1,000 requests per second. Anybody got any ideas why the website isn't getting caned or really hit with web requests as much as it was in level one? Because level one, it was one for one. Yeah? No, not quite. Close. We're using the blob storage for the images. So blob storage is receiving those hits. So if you see me at the end, I've got a charger for you as well, okay? But that proves that by offloading that load of requests, then we can handle more of the actual web traffic that we need to on our web servers. Yeah. The maximum amount of throughput on the storage. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. I can find it out for you, but I don't have it right here now. So level two, what else could we do to this? Because we haven't done a huge amount of work, but we've managed to go from around about 50 requests per second to now well up to 20,000 requests per second. So we can configure autoscale, and we'll have a look at that before we move on. We could optimize the website code. So you've seen that we haven't changed any of the code in the web app. We've made one small change to use blob storage for images, but effectively we've still not changed anything. So there might be something we can do in there. You could optimize your SQL queries. So the SQL in this application is relatively simple, but in real line of business applications, sometimes it can be quite complex. Queries hitting lots of indexes. So it's a key of being able to make sure that your procedures can be compiled, that the indexes are in the right place, all of that kind of goodness. We could add a caching layer, so we could use Redis cache. So we could have that service from inside Azure and back that layer as well. And to go to the gentleman's suggestion, yeah, we could use CDN for content. So we'd recommend that you use CDN for JavaScript and CSS. We've got our own offering. And then if you're using jQuery frameworks and that sort of thing, they're often backed by additional CDNs, which you can make use of public. Obviously, making sure that you can handle failover if they're not available to you. And then you can leverage other services. So let's have a look at autoscale, and then I'm going to show you a great example of where, even with Microsoft properties, that we leverage other services for our benefit. So in the preview portal, if I go into the website, we have a settings blade, and we have scale. So you'll see over time that we have auto-scaled this instance with some previous traffic. And we can scale based on performance or CPU percentage. You can do auto-scale in the current published portal, the production portal, the blue one. However, you can only tweak that based on CPU, whereas with the new portal, we can do a lot more. So if I go and add a metric just to demonstrate this, we can now, let's zoom into that. So we can now use the metrics of memory percentage, disk queue length, HTTP queue, data in, data out, in addition to the CPU performance. So this means you've got finer control about when you want to auto-scale and when you don't want to scale. So if we choose HTTP queue length, we can set a threshold. So we can say how many, what threshold of that queue do we want to actually be hit? And over a minimum of 5 minutes. So auto-scaling works over 5 minutes. So if for 5 minutes continuous you've got, say, more than five requests in your queue, then this would initiate at scale. And then you can choose how many instances you want to scale up by. Up to a maximum of 10 by default. If you've got a workload that needs more than 10 instances, speak to us. We can see we can help you get more instances. But there is a hard limit before we start saying you need to scale out regionally. And then there's a cooldown minute. So how long do we want you to wait until we start deprovisioning instances because that peak traffic has dropped off? And then you've also got scale down rules as well to handle that. So.
So the web tier.
It depends where your bottleneck is. If your bottleneck's at the web tier, then this will help you. If your bottleneck's at SQL, then you need to move up to a higher tier of SQL, I'm afraid.
Would this adapt then to realize that you were having IO problems behind the website? I mean, obviously, because you get indirect impacts in some of these metrics.
It works on queue length rather than status, so we're not seeing, it doesn't work on bad request queue. So maybe that's something that I could check for you and find out the answer, but I don't know off the top of my head what we do in the background. It would kind of make sense that we do monitor that, but off the top of my head, I can't give you a straight answer. So to highlight where Microsoft uses additional services, so this is the Microsoft Office blog, and you could make use of Azure Media Services to serve content, and we do that in some instances, but on this blog, we're using YouTube. The video, therefore, is discoverable via YouTube, and it's discoverable via your website, but the load for that video serving and the video content streaming is not on your website servers, it's on theirs. So it means that you get higher performance again. So where are we? So we've gone from level one, which was our basic gallery site at 100 requests per second, and we've now moved to over 10,000 requests per second. We're pushing 20,000 from those figures, and we're at level two. But what does it really take to go to boss level? So we've got a situation where we need to really handle a huge amount of load. So we've got a really successful product launch or something similar, and we've got people diving in from all over the world. So let's architect like a boss. So what we're looking at here is, initially, you get a side effect of architecting for scale. So say you're deployed to West US. This could be West Europe, for example, with the audience. We have got a replica of our site. Users using that, and the traffic's all going through. But what happens if there's a problem with that data center or those instances there? What do we do? If we've got a replica in East US, or North Europe in the case of the European data centers, we can then route the traffic for that user straight across so that we don't end up with a loss of service. So we've architected for scale so we can handle more use, but we've also architected for disaster recovery and high availability. So let's have a look at the gaps with our level two application. So currently, the web application is only deployed in one data center. So we are locked to one specific region. Images are stored in a storage account that is in the same specific region. And again, the database, once again, is in the same data region. That is what you would want with one instance in one region, because you don't want to be put in, you know, you don't want to put your database in Asia and then have your website in North Europe, because the performance on your latency would just be horrible. So this is the right way to architect for that level. However, to take it global, we need to implement active-active replication across regions. So we need to have the database replicated and we need to have the storage replicated. The benefit is there is we get bigger scale, so we can handle twice the load. We get lower latency, so if I've got an instance of my application in a US data center, and I've got an instance in my European data center, all my consumers from Europe will get routed to the European data center. Their latency will be a lot lower. They're not having to make the hop across the Atlantic over fiber. We've got higher uptime in DR. Because we've got two instances, it's less likely that we will have downtime, because where something might happen to one data center, laws of probability, it's unlikely to happen to the two at the same time. So therefore, we've got higher probability there. And we've got disaster recovery, as highlighted by the diagram before. If we lose one of the data centers for whatever reason, or we deploy a bad version of the app in that data center, we can immediately fail over and use the other. So this is an overview of where we're trying to get to. So let's see how we do that. So we start with the website, blob storage, and SQL in data center one. Then we add the web job for handling the upload, and we have the queue for posting the messages on. So the website posts a message to the queue. The queue is then read by the web job. The web job then writes to blob storage and SQL, as we explained earlier. And then the website is able to read from SQL and get the information out. Now what we need to do is do the same replica in another data center. We add SQL Server replication, geo-replication, so we end up with a master and then a read-only database, but they are geo-replicated. We add Traffic Manager on the front end so that we can handle the routing of the requests. We now extend the web jobs to handle writing to the opposite instance as well. So if a customer is served by, say, the East US data center, then that web job's responsible for writing to the West US blob storage as well, and vice versa. We can also add in a CDN to give us even more scale. So then we have the benefit of having the resources for JavaScript and CSS very, very close. Okay, let's have a look at the application itself. Close this browser. We don't need Web Matrix anymore. Okay. So you see here we have a URL based off Traffic Manager. The Traffic Manager sits in front of multiple instances of an application, instances of a site, and handles the distribution of that traffic for us. So we sit behind the Traffic Manager, but then we have the application here deployed level 3 south. So that's one copy in our south data center. And we also have level 3 north in our northern data center. Dependent on where you are in the world depends on which one you get. So currently, on the Traffic Manager URL, you'll see highlighted in the far left-hand corner, I'm receiving the website served from the South Data Center, South US. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put those side by side. So I've got south and I've got north, and let's hope this one works, because this is quite cool if I can get it to go. I'm going to take a picture of you all, just to prove this is live and I really did it. So there we go. Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to upload that image. So I'm using the Traffic Manager endpoint. I'm logged in on my phone, so let me just log in here. It's timed me out. Here we go. Upload by the power of Wi-Fi. So there you are. Pretty much instantaneous. We've got replication in two data centers over geographies. Pretty cool. And if I dive into DevTools in these, you'll see that that storage site is running off of Storage North. So that's the North website. And that image is coming from Storage South. So we've done the replication across the back. In the back end, SQL Azure is taking care of the replication of a SQL Server. So what have we done? We've copied images to remote regions. We've used a queue, and we've used a pattern called CQRS to update the database. We're handling the update and the data processing asynchronously by using web jobs, which is taking the load off the front ends of our websites. We've added Traffic Manager. I'll demonstrate Traffic Manager in a second. And we are controlling and synchronizing deployment. So Azure Websites has a feature called Site Slots, where you can deploy multiple copies of your website at different stages and then switch and promote straight up. So you could do dev, UAT, test, that sort of thing. Or you could do pre-prod, so you can just do a live switch when you're ready to do a deployment. So if we quickly look at Traffic Manager, so I have that up here. Traffic Manager is currently in our production portal. So there we go. So we have two examples in this instance because we've been doing some other testing, but here's the level 3 one that we've been using, level3.trafficmanager.net. And you can see information about how that's distributed. You can see we've had some traffic this morning, so that's good. And there we have two endpoints. So you'll see that we have a North Central US deployment and a South Central US deployment. And what Traffic Manager does, it detects when one's missing or when one's failing and one market is disabled, and then route the traffic to the one that is available. So it's a smart load balancer in that sense. They've recently announced some nested profiles, which may be of interest to you as well. There's some good content on the Azure blog. And we configure in currently on performance. You can configure on a round robin, so literally whichever one's, you know, I'll just route you to the one that's not handling anything at the moment. And then we've also got failover rules, so you can handle your request that way. You can route to a relative path or a file name if that's your desire. So a couple of caveats, word of caution with this solution, which dependent on the way that your application is needed and the requirements, may mean that you need to look at slightly different approaches. So using a queue to sync the database actually leads to eventual consistency. So you saw in the level 2, it eventually hit there. Level 3 was pretty much immediate, but you are in a situation where because you're doing replication, the replication will go through, but it's sometimes eventual. It's not instantaneous, so you need to handle your concurrency in that instance. Syncing the database does work for most scenarios. However, it doesn't work for everybody. It depends on what type of application you're running. An active-active for your application is very much dependent on what kind of thing you're serving. So once you're getting up to this level, we can do a huge amount of performance, but it depends on the application itself. So we've gone all the way from over 100 RPS up to 10,000 RPS, and we've gone over 100,000 RPS because we can scale out now to more regions and more data centers. So if we're roughly doing 20,000 requests per second in one region, at another region, another 20,000, at another region, and so on and so on and so on, and we can tweak, we can customize, we can make changes to indexes and that sort of thing, and we can get even more performance. So another example of, that's a great sample application. However, a common CMS system that is used globally, indeed it's used inside Microsoft, is WordPress. And we've worked with WordPress to actually work in order to get massive scale out of WordPress. So let me just close those. Okay, so we have a WordPress blog here. It's just a sample WordPress blog. But we've done exactly the same thing that we did with the previous example. So we have a Traffic Manager URL here, which is the front end, which most clients see. And then below that, one key, We've got an East US deployment and a West US deployment. So we've got the same thing back in. And if we look at the images, in this case, we're actually using the CDN. So the CDN's back in the storage of those images, and that's where they're stored. But it's the same sort of patterns and same sort of principles that we've been moving forward with. Some recommended reading. We have a security MVP in Australia called Troy Hunt, who has written a fantastic blog post on how he scaled his Azure website to handle over 380,000 queries per minute. And that's it's a web application where you can put in your email address and find out whether your email address was contained in various security breaches around the world. So when somebody's database gets hacked, then you can and find that using that. Weblogs.asp.net they're hosted on Orchard, and they're hosted on Azure websites. And there's a fantastic video there, which is about an hour long, where they go into the detail of how they've done that and the solutions they come up with for various elements. So in summary, Azure websites can scale to answer all of your business scale needs. It can handle the workload that you want to push through it. It's often a case of slight tweaks in your architecture in order to get that horizontal scale. With Azure websites, your website is always running because there's no perceived downtime if you're horizontally distributed, because we can maintain them up. Azure websites has a fantastic amount of functionality. If you haven't looked at websites for quite a while, take a look. The product is adding new features very, very rapidly. And even in the last 6 months, what we've added in terms of enterprise features, such as VPNs, hybrid connectivity, staging slots, that sort of thing, we've got so much to offer. And it's very easy to develop and maintain your Azure website, because all you're focused on is the actual website application. You're not concentrating on standing up VMs, patching them, that sort of thing. If you have any questions, now's a great time to ask them. We've got a lady with the mic there. And otherwise, I'll be here for a few minutes at the end. And you can catch me on Twitter, and that's my email address. So do we have any questions? That's okay. So the question was, how many instances of websites can you have? The limit is 10. By contacting us, we can get you 20. There's a blog post to support that currently on blogs.azure.com. After that, we'd be advising you to horizontally scale, so to scale across multiple data centers. Any more?
Hi, and thank you. What would you say, when are you supposed to choose Azure web roles rather than websites in terms of scalability? When is either one the better choice?
Well, so the question is when do you choose web roles over websites effectively? Web roles do have higher SKUs in terms of tiers. So we support small, medium, and large, but I think they can support larger than that. So if you've got something particularly memory or CPU intensive, then that may be your choice. However, our opinion is unless you're installing a framework or some custom utility or additional software that we don't support on websites, that's when you would use web roles. We can handle the scale. It's not the scale, it's the problem. So we can take care of that, and we're slightly easier to manage than web roles. Any more? Oh, one there and one at the back.
So during the demo, you showed stuff on the new portal and some stuff on your old portal.
Yeah.
Is there parity in terms of just managing the websites? The traffic manager is in the old one.
Yeah.
Websites, is it feature complete in the new portal?
So the issue with the preview portal is not every service is in the preview portal. So as you kindly pointed out, traffic manager is still in the old portal. Each team is actively moving their information, their configuration to the new preview portal, but that's why it's still in preview. However, there are elements of our service which you can only configure inside the preview portal, like I showed with AutoScale. You can do the auto-scaling in the original portal, in the current production portal. However, we've added more functionality to the new portal. And I think VPN connectivity and hybrid connectivity, you need to do that through the new portal as well. So websites is one of the first applications in the preview portal. So we're continuing to invest in that direction. But if you ever find that you can't find something, just drop us a line and we'll help you out. Okay,
everything you can do in the old portal, you can already do in the new portal regarding websites?
Regarding websites, yes. There's a gentleman at the back.
Is there any configuration that I can do in the traffic manager to have an Azure website and an on-premise as a secondary?
I don't believe so, because the traffic manager endpoint points to a resource local. I tell you what, I've got a you can do it, but you have to use PowerShell. Okay. I haven't tried, but I was going to try for you. But the chances are that, as you say, if you can do it through PowerShell, there's an API for it. We just maybe don't surface that facility with inside the actual management portal itself. One here and one here.
What about caching? Well, what does it mean when we have replicated sites? Are the caches, for example, Redis cache, are they distributed or not? Or do we need to do that ourselves?
So you would, again, have multiple implementations per region of your cache. But it depends what you're storing in that cache at that time that you're making use of. So an ideal example in our instance is we were storing session state in the database. But that's read quite frequently, so you might decide that we want to store that in session. Then you've got an issue of being able to synchronize across regions, but that, you know, these are the kind of potential speed bumps that you get with going to scale. But once you've done the initial work, then you're in the position where you can just scale at a click of a button rather than you've got to re-architect. So it's all about putting the pattern in, really. Does that answer your question? Or?
Not fully. I mean, when I have two instances, I probably have two caches. So when I do an update on one instance, then the other one will not have the update in the cache.
So you're concerned with local cache or distributed cache? Because distributed cache, both instances would be reading from that one instance.
Yeah, the question is the cache distributed or not? I mean, or do we need to synchronize caches ourselves, for example?
I can't answer that straight off because I don't work on the Redis cache team. But if you leave me your details, I can get you an answer or point you to the resources to help.
Okay.
So if I understood it right, if the bottleneck is in the SQL Server level, we have the option to scale up, to use a higher-level SQL Server instance. Are there any techniques to scale out, for example, partitioning data or anything like this?
So scale out in terms of SQL Azure is replicating to regions. I'm not familiar whether we can... off the top of my head, I can't remember whether we can allow a replication with inside a region so that you can just have multiple instances of, say, a P1 inside the same region. It doesn't sound crazy, but I wouldn't like to say for definite that we can do that. But if you have a look on the documentation for SQL Azure, you'll easily find out. Any further questions? Okay, if you've got any more and you don't want to air them in public, then you can come and talk to me. I'll be here for another 10, 15 minutes. In the meantime, please feel free to contact me through those means. We have some resources, Channel 9. Channel 9 is a fantastic resource for all sessions that we do at conferences such as Build, TechEd. There's a massive catalog there. If you haven't checked out the other website sessions this week, Stefan did a session on websites for enterprise on Tuesday. That will be up on there. And Ahmed did a session on some great nuggets with inside websites, some hidden treasures. So check out that. We've got some great learning resources. There's TechNet resources for IT pros, and obviously our developer network. More information about our dev tracks, Twitter handles. Please submit your feedback in your evaluations. As a speaker, I find it incredibly useful because then I work out what things you liked, what you didn't like, and then I can change delivery to improve it. So thank you very much.